Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chaunty Brown. We have a very exciting show for you this evening. First, we want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. This is our first national U.S. politics broadcast. Today, we have a young man who is the chairman of the North Carolina 5th District Republican Liberty Caucus, Chairman Robert Logan, in our studio today. We are very happy to have him. Welcome. How are you today, Chairman Pope?
I'm doing all right, Chauncey. I'm really sorry about that. I really appreciate you letting me come on to this this groundbreaking show. This being the first one, and you having me as your guest, and just needed to kind of correct you, but it's Robert Logan Pope. So if you want to, you can just say Chairman Robert Pope. So you don't even have to include the middle name.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you on our show. Now, you represent the Liberty Caucus Party. That's a 527. It's like a PAC, a voluntary grassroots membership organization that's dedicated to working within the Republican Party to advance the principles of individual rights, limited governments, and free markets. That's why you're on the show. But if you don't mind, before we get to the Republican Liberty Caucus, can you tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, who Robert Logan Pope is and basically how we got to this point?
Well, actually a pretty long story, but I'll condense it, obviously, for the show. I was born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was born as the son of a former Vietnam veteran, former police officer, and a mom who just took a job when we needed to make ends meet. And they were two baby boomers, so I'm part of a young, older generation than I probably should be. But, you know, my father growing up had a lot of issues growing up related to PTSD and some other stuff that had happened to him. So it was a rough upbringing. The house was very, I guess, chaotic and whatnot. And I wanted to get out of there. I didn't get to finish high school. I actually got pulled out in the seventh grade, though, because I was attacked on a school bus. So I wanted to achieve a really, really big educational dream of either going to law school or finishing a PhD. And I had this issue with, okay, how do I do this? How do I get from A to B? So I was basically told, okay, you're not really having much of a chance here. But I decided, you know what, I'm just going to start from scratch. So when I was 19 years old, I ended up going back to school. I got my GED. I don't have a high school diploma, so it made the journey a little bit different. Thank you very much. And from there, I went to Central Piedmont Community College, where I studied for a couple of years. I had some issues there related to my family. My brother was stricken down with leukemia around the end of the first year of the second semester in 2009, excuse me. And we had to take care of him from 2009 to 2010 when the cancer went into remission. It took me a little longer to get my associate's degree. In 2011, I transferred to UNC Charlotte for my bachelor's degree, and I was extremely shocked that they let me in because, you know, when you don't have a high school diploma, it's a lot more difficult to get into a university. But I was elated when they allowed me to come in. And my brother was still battling cancer because it had come back. And that summer, I had donated bone marrow to him while transferring to UNC Charlotte. And I transferred to UNC Charlotte, but for some reason didn't get my associates. I found out, I want to say, right around the spring semester of 2014 that I was missing two classes, so I took them in the spring semester. And because of an individual, her name is Michelle Blackwell, she works for the National Reverse Transfer Program in D.C. now. But when I met her, she was working for the state, the UNC Reverse Transfer Program. And I was one of the trial members of that program to get their credits sent back from the four-year university, send that back to a community college, Central Piedmont, and was awarded the degree of Associate in Arts in July of 2014, which was 7 months, 5 months actually, before I ended up graduating with my bachelor's at UNC Charlotte. And I was 28 when I got my bachelor's degree. So I started college at 22. So it was
okay.
It was a long journey. And I ended up, after that, kind of going to different jobs, not trying to find something that was me. And I studied politics because my undergrad was political science. I studied American politics, electoral administration and behavior. And I got the opportunity of a lifetime because I'd been Young Republicans chairman in 2009. I'd served as a member of the UNC Charlotte Student Senate when I was over at UNC Charlotte for a year. And during that year, we had a $225,000 budget as I sat on the Organizational Ways and Means Committee that we appropriated to student organizations for educational trips and journeys. I was vice chairman of that committee. Next year, I served as senior class vice president. I was also Pi Sigma Alpha president, which is the National Honor Society for political science students at the university level. Then when I graduated, I ended up getting a call from a friend. His name's Jason Williams. Because of my days in the Gaston GOP, or Gaston County GOP, he said, "Robbie, I've got this position for you as a volunteer coordinator for this campaign, as a congressional campaign." And, you know, at 29 years of age, I'd never been a paid staffer before, so I jumped at the chance and I loved it. You know, there were long
awesome.
Hours, and yeah, they were there were long hours. And you know, to start the campaign, I you know, we were just making phone calls, voter calls. We were making I'm blanking now. Volunteer calls.
Listen, that's okay. That's okay. Before you continue, I just can't believe the obstacles that you had to overcome before you got to this point.
Yeah, I mean,
even listening to your educational piece, I know that you're in a master's program right now, correct?
That's correct, actually.
You didn't mention
science,
that.
Actually...
You want to talk about that real quick, the master's program that you're in?
Yeah. I was actually going to get to that because it was the campaign that ended up getting me to App State.
Oh, I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, not a problem, my friend. When the campaign ended, we ended up with 133 votes short. Out of 26,000 cast. And believe me when I tell you, that was a painful loss. But I knew that what I wanted to do for a living after that. I wanted to be in politics. Not that people tell me I was stupid, but I knew that this was what I wanted to do because it felt like to me I was making a difference and it mattered. So I spoke to the candidate. His name was Mark Harris, a great man. Unfortunately, the debacle in the 9th district really kind of soured some of his reputation right now. I just think he was a victim of some bad circumstances. But he gave me my recommendation, well, one of my three recommendations as my former employer, to go to Appalachian State University to begin my master's program because that's what I told him I wanted to do. And I got two other recommendations, the other two from former professors. One was named Martha Croft, who was the interim policy director at UNC Charlotte and was my academic advisor there, and another one who was a classical studies professor. So I get those academic references, and I'm taking a huge risk because my GPA was around 3.191 in my undergrad. So I have no clue. I don't think these guys are going to accept me one bit because, you know, I've got a GED, I've got an associate's degree. So I had to go the hard way. And, you know, a lot of these other kids, and I'm talking kids because I'm 32, I'll be 33 this year, and I'm over at this university where I've always been older than the kids that I'm going to school with, but the dichotomy between my own age and these kids, some are 17, 18, 19 years of age, and it's just the generational gap is enormous. So, and nine out of 10 of these kids, nine out of 10 of these kids came straight from high school. So I'm about as non-traditional of a student as you're going to get. But I don't feel as bad about being as old as I am graduating at 28 from my undergrad because, and just to kind of divert and kind of move backwards a little bit beforehand, when I graduated from UNC Charlotte with my undergrad, my father would always give me guff about it, saying that he'd have had his degree by now. But when I graduated from UNC Charlotte, at the ceremony, our chancellor would play this game where everybody would stand, and he would gradually call out a period of years. So if you graduated with your degree in less than 3 years or less than 4 years or whatever, you would sit down. I made it 6.5 years. So yes, that's how long it took me to get my undergrad.
Yes.
The last person standing took 35 years to get his bachelor's. 35.
Wow.
And I was in the elevator with him to the ceremony because him and I were actually in the same department. And I just, him and I had a conversation about that, and I just felt better about myself. So moving forward back to this master's degree, the reason I wasn't as, you know, as self-conscious about it was just because of what he had to go through. And now I'm doing a master's degree a lot sooner than he did. So I applied to App State. I got my information in. I took the GRE, but here's the thing. I took the GRE. When I did that, it was cold. I didn't study much for it. I didn't have time.
Right.
Because everything happened so fast. It was like a bang-bang scenario that I'm getting. The campaign's over in June. The application's due by July, but I'm not taking July 1st, but I'm not taking the GRE till July 11th. Well, I was told it wasn't a hard deadline. So, okay, that's great. Wonderful. And I was actually very excited about that. So I got my GRE in real quick. There was some mix-up because the program director, the director of graduate studies in the Government and Justice Studies Department, her name was Renee Sherland. That year, or at least that biennial term, because it rotates every 2 years in that department, she thought it was going to be a hard deadline, so she said you can apply for spring. The former director or former co-directors said, no, it's not a hard deadline, and the grad studies office took his application and my GRE scores. So we had to straighten that out and straighten her out a little bit, and we ended up getting my application in, and I was basically as paranoid as I get when it comes to stuff like this and as self-conscious as I am, because when you come from all that and other obstacles, you don't think you're going to be able to get to the next one. And I ended up befriending an admissions counselor and pretty much irritating one of the faculty there. And because I would call them a lot. And then next thing I know, I get a call from the admissions counselor. Her name is Victoria Carlberg, whom I pretty much – I called her almost once or twice a day, sometimes once or twice a day. And she gives me a call saying that, Robbie, guess what? You're in. And I said,
awesome.
Wow.
That's an awesome story. For those who are, and I don't mean to interrupt you, Chairman, just for one moment. For those who are listening in, you're listening to U.S. National Politics Blog Talk Radio Station. We are blessed and honored to have a young man who is an American dream, who worked his way up, and he's currently working on his master's. We have with us in the studio Mr. Chairman Robert Logan, who is the chairman of the 5th District Republican Liberty Caucus. We want to thank him for being in our studio today and sharing his experience of how he had to get his education the hard way by getting his GED, going for a community college degree, and then hopefully getting accepted for his bachelor's. Now he's working on his master's degree, and he's involved in politics, and we're really thankful to have you on the show. If you don't mind, can you talk about, for the last segment of the show, because your background is awesome, and we would love to have you back on the show again to talk more. Your story on how you arrive to this is extraordinary, and I think that it should be well noted that you are the classic American dream, where you had to work hard to get to every step, but if you continue and be persistent, you're an example of the perseverance. You have an interest in politics. You are a Republican. You're the chairman of the 5th District Republican Liberty Caucus. How'd you get involved in politics? And then, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about the Republican Liberty Caucus and what's its goal and objectives.
My family's always been conservative. Of course, when I was in my teens and probably in my early 20s, I didn't even know really what that was. So I get involved in when I started Central Piedmont Community College. I'm just walking around campus and during some of my time off, and I'm just, kind of curious about things. So I walk into student life. Didn't even know that existed or what that was. So I walk in. They put up they've got SGA on all the flyers and everything, and I said, "What's that?" And they said, "Student Government Association," and we get into what it is and representing the students, being a voice for the students. Next thing I know, I'm a member of the Student Senate there at CPCC at the Central Campus. And not long after, I'm Senate Chairman there for the Central Campus. And we get involved, and I'm thinking, because I really enjoy just this mechanism here, I start looking up more and more governance and more government stuff. And I actually take in my second semester some government, American government classes. But during that time, it was 2008 where I started being more involved in SGA and I got into college. I'm hearing about this election coming up in 2008, where the financial crisis was just a disaster. The economy beginning really in 2007 had just tanked, and got millions of people lost their jobs. I don't know if it's exactly millions, but it was a catastrophic meltdown. I mean, they brought the economy to its knees in Wall Street. But and then you have Barack Obama, senator at that time. Then you have Senator John McCain, those two duking it out. And then Hillary Clinton was supposed to be the anointed candidate for the Democrats, and she gets beat by an upstart, and he basically smashes her in the primary for the Democrats. So you got him and John McCain duking it out, and now I'm – the more John McCain talks, I'm not that big of a fan of John McCain. God rest his soul, I don't wish ill for him, but his politics just really didn't seem too much different from Barack Obama to me. But I looked at the platforms from both parties, because if you don't really look at it, you really can't say you're giving it due diligence. So I look at the Democratic Party's platform, and I see stuff about abortion. I see stuff about free money. I don't know what free money is, because I've always had to work for my money. I see stuff about, they're on one hand talking about not giving, visas to illegal immigrants, but now wanting them pretty much to vote. So they go from one, it just goes from party politics there. And then Republicans, truthfully, not that much better, but their philosophy is better suited for my, my palate for politically, because we don't believe in pro-abortion. We do believe in traditional view of marriage. I always did. I still do. I always stood by an individual being able to make the money that they want to make and being able to keep it, because it's theirs.
Exactly.
And not government's.
Exactly.
And I always believe that, if two people contract, it doesn't matter what the government thinks. So if you want to pay somebody whatever it is you want to pay, that's not the government's business. And in my opinion, unions, while in a certain time had their place, they're ruining the economy in this country, especially some of the public sector unions. Holy crap. But the biggest thing for me was just, you know, pro-marriage, pro-life. I do have a lot of social issues, but mainly I'm economic and educational. So as well as foreign policy, non-interventionalist is different from isolationist. So we need to pull out of the wars, which I support President Trump wholeheartedly on. So I did my due diligence. I get on board with the GOP. And I vote for John McCain. I have to hold my nose. I think a lot of people get that here. But he loses by a landslide. And I'm more involved in SGA. I get more involved in the political science classes. And I get more involved in my local Republican Party in Gaston County. And I really don't – I get involved in a political campaign. My first political campaign was for then North Carolina Senate candidate Kathy Harrington. I was a volunteer for her campaign. And that was my first ever political campaign. She won that race that year. So, you know, she did really well. She blasted past the primary, which she had three opponents in the primary and one opponent in the general. And she blasted right past them. It wasn't even funny. Because Gaston County is not even marginally. It is safely Republican. So I'm helping out a friend of mine also named Kelly Hastings. I volunteer a little bit for his campaign. I still support Kelly. Great guy. Wonderful. And I get involved in more and more local campaigns, county commissioner, city council, and then I eventually go for a congressional campaign.
Right. So, but are you doing all of this stuff as you are the chair for the Republican Liberty Caucus? Is that one of your roles to get involved in all these other campaigns, or this is prior to becoming the chair?
I didn't become chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus of the 5th District until last year in September 2018 when we first organized. We organized in September, the North Carolina Republican Liberty Caucus, to which I also serve as vice chair, began 30 years ago. It's the first ever Republican Liberty Caucus in America. It precedes the National Republican Liberty Caucus. So I wanted to have a local Republican Liberty Caucus, and we're always pushing for local Republican Liberty Caucuses. So I wanted to be one of the first to organize around the geographical area that I'm helping to organize. So we decided that we wanted to just go ahead and create the group, and we did. The Republican Liberty Caucus, both at the federal, state, and local level, are 527s. We're not really packed. And we can and
right.
we do endorse candidates. So what we do is we find the candidate, and we're realists, we're not stupid, that when we see candidates and we send out surveys, which are actually currently in the process of creating now for the next biennial election cycle, we're going to go ahead and send out a survey of questions like maybe at the congressional level, do you support detention of U.S. citizens? Do you support unconstitutional mandates like Obamacare? Do you support regulations, certain regulations? Do you support pro-life, stuff like that, within the Republican Party? Once the primary's over, it doesn't matter, because if our guy doesn't win the primary, we didn't support him enough or give that person enough support. So regardless of who it is, the Republican – I don't care who you are. The Republican's better than the Democrat any day of the week and twice on Sunday. So we get behind the Republican that wins the primary. And the only thing that we seek to do is to make sure that we have the Republican who is the most liberty-minded, who believes in freedom. If you want to contract, then you can contract however you want to. Now, me being pro-traditional marriage, I don't believe that the government has any business being involved in that at all. So what that basically means is our government needs to be out of that. As long as they're two consenting adults who want to go to a lawyer and say, draw up whatever contract they want, leave it alone. I mean, it's not breaking my leg or picking my pocket, but we don't really care. But,
exactly.
You know, at the state level, North Carolina, you know, that because it's now federal, it's not even federal law, it's just federal case law now, that's really a moot point. So we're just going to let that go to the extent that we can get the federal, any kind of government out of it. And when it comes to economics, which is the biggest thing, we believe that the economy should not be regulated until the point where it's almost dead. Okay, we don't want to end up like Venezuela. Now, as a grad student at App State and as chair of the 5th District Republican Liberty Caucus, I'm seeing a lot of the students over there who talk positively about socialism, and I'm literally almost about to pull my hair out, what's left of it. And I'm literally looking at these kids like, if you want to talk about socialism, let's talk about Venezuela. And they just say it's not real socialism. I said, well, I don't know what real socialism is if that's not what it is. But
eating at a garbage truck? Yeah.
Apparently, or rat kun pao or something like that, you know, where instead of, you know, getting Chinese food, you're getting rats in your dinner. I don't know. I mean, when you've got government stores and those government stores aren't even really fully packed or something like that, it makes no sense as to why the most prosperous country in Central America, Venezuela, and not even that long, they were the most prosperous country in Central America, turned into a rotting cesspool of socialism and violence. I've
corruption.
Never seen a country. Yes, and the corruption.
Political corruption.
I mean,
yeah.
look at the Maduro government. Excuse me. I mean,
mm-hmm.
What in the world is going on there? You know, and they want to bring that nonsense here. I don't think so. Not over my dead body. So, and that's one of the things that the Republican Liberty Caucus does too, because we work with an organization called the Young Americans for Liberty, and that organization is very liberty-minded, and one of the things that they kept saying to us was that the fringe elements define the moderate, or the middle. So if you want to try and pull it to the right a little bit more, your moderates are going to be toward the right a bit more. So, you know, instead of having a Mitt Romney, we can have a Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, we're for Rand Paul. So I'm a big Rand Paul fan. I wish he'd have won the primary, but we'll stick with what we've got until at such time as 2024 happens, and hopefully we can have a President Paul, because that's where the RLC's bread and butter is. Ron Paul would be ideal because he didn't fed. But the Republican Liberty Caucus, like I said, it's the conscience of the Republican Party, pro-civil rights, you know, your rights, I don't care what, you know, God rest his soul, Justice Scalia said, your rights are ironclad to the extent that the exceptions to the Constitution are met. If the Constitution's exceptions are met, as in if you need a warrant to get something, you have to get a warrant. Exigent circumstances is just another way for the courts to allow police officers to get away with violating people's rights. You know, these different things. Go ahead.
No, Mr. Chairman, I was just thinking that it's great that we have you on the show. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and we're going to have you back on the show again for those who are listening. This is U.S. National Politics, and in our studio today, we have Chairman Robert Logan Pope, North Carolina 5th District Republican Liberty Caucus. We want to thank him for being on the show today, and we hope that you come back because you have a wealth of information, especially on the grassroots of the Republican Party and what we need to do to move candidates forward. I want to say thank you to you and all the listeners, and also, you know, want to say that I hope that you come back on the show again. Would you like to say anything in closing,
sir?
Really,
stay involved. I mean, this is. These are going to be the most important elections of our lifetime. We are literally one election away from socialism. And then I'm talking about the kind of socialism that you see is burning Europe to the ground, that's burning Venezuela to the ground. This is what they want to bring here. They may not know it, but this is exactly what they're going to bring here. And, you know, you may not like some of the things that the president does, but he's the best person right now to keep our country as a capitalist country. And you can say what you want to about him, but the fact is, when he said we will never be a socialist country, you got to stand by that, because capitalism has been the only thing that has uplifted societies out of utter poverty.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you. I want to thank you once again, Mr. Chairman, for being on the show, and I hope that you'll come back on again. I want to thank all of our listeners and our studio audience for listening to U.S. National Podcast. Politics. I'm Chauncey Brown. I'm your host, and we will talk to you again soon. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.